This is A New Angle, a show about cool people doing awesome things in and around Montana. I'm your host, Justin Angle. This show is supported by First Security Bank, Blackfoot Communications, and the University of Montana College of Business. Hey folks, welcome back, and thanks for tuning in. Today I am speaking with Ezra Graham, the purveyor of News Nerds, a podcast on which he's interviewed the likes of Glenn Close, David Cross, Alberto Gonzalez, and many others.
Really, for me, the biggest compliment that I can get after an interview is when somebody says, "Wow, I've never told anybody about that, or I haven't talked about that in so long."
Ezra started News Nerds in 2020 at the age of 11. Now in high school, he's published over 100 episodes. Ezra, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So tell us, where did you grow up and what do your parents do?
I grew up here mostly. I was born in Vermont and we lived in Utah for less than a year, but primarily I've just been in Bozeman here.
And you're a freshman in high school, is that right?
Yep, I'm a freshman at Gallatin High School.
So let's talk about News Nerds. Give us the origin story. You know, what is News Nerds and how did it come to be?
I was online for school and, you know, it's just seeing the screen and not really having the experience of going to school, going in person, and just really being locked down because of COVID. That made me uncertain. And that was when I was 10 years old. I eventually got this little clock radio. I could tune it to whatever I wanted because it kind of taught me about journalism and how good journalists operate. I heard programs like Fresh Air. I heard programs like yours, and I was reading things in the Chronicle here from Montana Free Press and from the New York Times. And I was seeing that, you know, I think there is a disconnect between what citizens hear and how it actually applies to their life. So as a tweenager, as they call it, I wanted to kind of embark on that journey by myself and see if I could bring that to other people's homes, to other people's radios. So I just started by interviewing my grandpa, and I think that's important to start small. But also, you know, we have to understand that ourselves, we ourselves have stories to tell. So I started by interviewing my grandpa. But from that time in 2020 when I started, I think really this has been an experiment for myself, and an experiment on how to do journalism, how to talk to people, and how to really create understanding between two sides of the aisle or two different sides of a coin.
Is it true that you sold eggs to your parents' restaurant to fund your first set of a proper podcasting equipment?
Yeah, so we never run ads at News Nerds because I think that's something that's pretty vital to being unbiased. I mean, everybody does it now. I think there's ways to get around it. But basically, my way to get around that was to just totally have a fiscally responsible budget. And that one of those ways to do that was to kind of be an entrepreneur. And for me, that was because I was at home, I sold eggs. So yes, that is true. And that was one source of revenue. And that bought me what I'm talking through right now. This bought me the mic. But also there's the community out there that really sees the interviews that I'm doing and the people that I'm talking to, and they can contribute too.
I like that sense of independence, right? You're not beholden to any advertiser, so that you can maintain some degree of journalistic independence. And that sounds like that's a core value to your operation.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, people see independence as something that this country was built on. And I think both political parties see it differently. But I think that's really what our lives come down to, is some sort of sovereignty and autonomy. And I think that should be reflected in our media today, too.
So let's talk about that first interview experience with your grandfather. I love the notion of, you know, starting close to home and, you know, somebody you had a personal relationship with and could come into kind of with a good plan to get started. Talk about that decision and the experience of the interview and kind of how you've developed from there as an interviewer.
Well, I would say that decision just came out of what I had available at the time. And I think citizens of this country have such an important part to play. And they often, to be honest, from what I've seen, they have more nuances to their lives than the famous and the rich and the powerful, because they're living the same way that you and I are. So even now, you know, I talk to people, journalists on the ground in Ukraine or in Afghanistan, or maybe a business owner in Kentucky whose business was destroyed by a tornado. You know, I keep checking in with those type of people. And I talk to voters, and I think that's an important way that I approach interviewing even now. So bringing that early aspect of how I approached it and applying it now, I think that's been helpful. But yeah, as you've alluded to, I have changed who I talk to. You know, for example, my last interview that I did was with Alice Waters, somebody who I adore,
right,
somebody who I love to talk to. I've talked to her twice now, but you know, she's definitely more famous than my grandpa. You know, I've talked to the interview before that was with comedian David Cross, and he is, you know, an actor as well. And I think that those interviews are entertaining and they have a lot to offer, but I wouldn't value them any more than the interview that I started off with my grandpa. Regarding like how I've changed as an interviewer, you know, it's interesting because a lot of interviewing comes from your speaking ability, and that's something that I've tried to strengthen, but you know, I'm still working on trying to ask the right questions and especially asking follow-up questions. I think it's, you know, important. That often is what creates the best interview. So looking at how can I follow up on this? What are the things that I'm missing? And most importantly, how can I make this interview chronological? I mean, obviously from the beginning of our day to the end of the day, we're living in an order, a sequence. And I think an interview should reflect that too.
And so your experience in interviewing and in just generally being a journalist, has that driven your interest in speech and debate? You participate in speech and debate for Gallatin High School. What has been the relationship between those two activities in your life?
I think speech and debate has actually strengthened my interviewing ability. That event really is centered around arguing both sides of a problem. And I think that's helped me to understand maybe what somebody's trying to say in an interview or what my agenda is in an interview. And it's taught me that not one single side is right. So speech and debate, especially when I'm talking to somebody in politics, maybe somebody like Tom Winter, who was a congressional candidate here, or Peter Ticton, who was one of Donald Trump's former attorneys, I can apply what I've learned in speech and debate, where basically there's more nuance to a story. It's a gray area, not a black or white area. And I can say, okay, well, we know that part of my audience is going to be on the left, part of my audience is going to be on the right, but I don't think either side of that audience is right, and I don't think I'm right at all. And that's what speech and debate has told me. You know, like, we need to talk more about the gray area and the commonalities that we have as Americans. But, you know, more than that, I think it's just been a fantastic way to learn about the world. And I think it definitely has been applicable to many things in my life. And I think that it's definitely an activity that will help young people down the road.
And that sensibility, you know, having humility when you enter into an exchange, you bring that into your interview style. Talk about how that applies with the current state of journalism and the journalistic sort of landscape that you're a part of, but also a consumer of.
Yeah, I mean, I look at myself and I see somebody that kind of reflects the old values of journalism. And, you know, I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I think it's good in the sense that we need to be more approachable as journalists, and we need to be less divisive, because I think there's a reason that people don't trust journalists as much. But I think it's bad in the sense that, of course, we need to adapt as a society, and journalists need to as well. In the media right now, you know, I think there's definitely some great coverage, there's some great investigations, and journalism is always such an important avenue for democracy to work. But I think there's also a growing movement in journalism to privatize the articles that people publish and to make revenue and to garner clicks off of campaigns. And I just don't think that's the way that we should approach things. You know, I think there's a way to modernize what we do. You know, we can take things online, we can use social media appropriately, but really what I am trying to do is kind of take what we were doing maybe 50 years ago, when there was, you know, a fairness doctrine, and when political candidates and the media were more of a civil forum and less of a one-sided debate. I think that's what we need to do.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I mean, there are profit motives to polarization and enragement, and some of those models are built into journalism itself. Some of the models are built into the social media platforms that a lot of journalistic enterprises rely on. How do you unwind that? I think you unwind it by doing exactly the sort of thing that you're doing. I mean, you have a show that has authenticity, and you bring that into your interviews. And it also comes forth in the selection of guests. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. You have such a wide range of guests, ranging across not only topics, but political sensibilities. It seems like you're very thoughtful about who you ask onto your show and how you choose to pursue the conversation. Talk about how that curation of guests helps drive the sort of authentic sensibility of your show.
I think it comes down to the fact that everybody should have a chance to talk. When I book for the podcast, I'm looking at publishers and what they're coming out with. I'm looking at the news and what opinions are being put out there. And I'm also looking at what are the human stories that we can take out of all of these events.
My guess is a lot of the folks you've had on, you know, these are a lot of prominent folks. And my hunch is that they've never been interviewed by somebody as young as you. How has your youth worked to your advantage in your experience?
Oh, I've played my youth every time I try to get somebody to talk to. No, I really do. I have a template for emails that I send out. And, you know, one of the first lines is that I am 14. But it's also been interesting, especially when I'm talking to other journalists. And that's something that I want to pursue in my later life, talking to them and hearing what they were doing at my age and how maybe I can follow in their footsteps, hopefully.
Are there things in the media that aren't representing young voices at the moment? I mean, do you feel like you occupy a unique space and a space that's needed in our media ecosystem? I mean, I certainly was attracted to your show just first by virtue of its quality, but also the storyline. We don't have, or I haven't had the opportunity to have young voices on the show as much as I'd like to. Do you feel like you can bring a new voice, a new perspective to the media that's lacking?
Not really. I think it's unusual what I'm doing. But to be honest, like when I see what I'm doing, I think there's definitely people that are like 75 years old that are doing a similar thing to what I'm doing in more ways than not. I'm actually copying them rather than bringing something new into the discussion. I think what I do bring is more recognition for journalists and how, you know, not everybody my age is going to become an influencer. Like, you know, obviously 10 years down the road, some people will be working office jobs, but also some people will have the opportunity to be a journalist or to be a writer. And, you know, in what some people say is a dying profession, I think that, you know, having young ambassadors to journalism and writing is probably a good thing.
We'll be back to my conversation with Ezra Graham after this short break. A New Angle is supported by First Security Bank, Blackfoot Communications, and UM's College of Business. Access to capital, broadband, and education are three ingredients any community needs for success.
This is Mike Morelli, Executive Director at MCT, and you are listening to A New Angle.
Welcome back to A New Angle. I'm speaking with high school student Ezra Graham about his approach to journalism. So thinking about your future as a journalist, I mean, what are some of the most important stories of our time and our future that you're thinking about? What are the biggest issues in society that sort of captivate your energy at the moment?
So I think, you know, as a journalist or as a future journalist, hopeful, I would say that covering foreign politics and foreign areas that Americans don't hear about that often can be helpful. So I've been thinking a lot about covering places like Africa, where we don't really hear that much about, even though there's an economic and political crisis. And even though that population on that single continent is so great, covering places especially that we see as foreign can help us to become more familiar. So I think hopefully I would like to cover places or things or stories that are part of a global narrative, for example, abortion or immigration, but we don't really hear a lot about. So the stories behind the stories, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Talk about your position on institutions. I mean, my sense is that you are a believer in the institution of journalism and feel that that it's critical to a functioning society. Talk about some of our other institutions, our democracy, capitalism in general. How do you feel about the sort of institutions that hold our society together? Are they functioning well? Do you have hope in there that they will endure the big challenges we face at the moment, whether it's political polarization, climate change, whatever? But you know, how do you feel about sort of the stability of our society moving forward?
You know, I think there's a distrust of institutions coming out of the pandemic, coming out of a presidential election that was pretty divisive. And I think that distrust, you know, there are merits to that distrust. So when we look at institutions that are regulating the ways that we live our lives, I think there should be some distrust. I think that's part of a democracy. But also, the institution of journalism is such a great avenue to examine that distrust. So instead of shutting people down or, you know, kind of disengaging with that distrust, I think journalists should talk to people and ask, why do you have that feeling? And I think that's applicable to like broader questions that you were just, you know, raising, like climate change or economic systems, because it can tell us how we can have a more conducive society. Our society is such, and I guess any society that's built upon a government is so dependent on institutions that I think that's a great starting point to kind of gauge how strong our democracy is. So, you know, when there's distrust of the institutions like there is now, instead of not engaging with that distrust, journalism can be a powerful avenue to look at that. And that's something that I think the media should be looking at too.
So as you've developed as an interviewer, as a journalist, talk about some of the influences on your craft. How have, you know, who are models that you try to emulate or learn from? Like what are the influences on how you do your work?
I think Montana Free Press is doing a great job with their voter guides for presidential and primary elections. I think that's very important because oftentimes people in Montana just don't know, you know, a name or who to vote for. And the Montana Free Press is doing a great work with that. NPR and our two great stations here, YPR and MTPR, are doing a great job. And also, I think the University of Montana, where you're based, is doing some great work, not only with this podcast, but also Jewel Banville and her work with her podcast, An Absurd Result. I think that was a great publication. So voices like that are really applicable to like how we live here in Montana. But also looking nationally, really how I started off was looking at those voices on NPR and in the newspaper. I look up to Nina Totenberg nationally because she was one of four women who was labeled the founding mothers of NPR. So when NPR started in the 1970s, and of course they just celebrated their 50th anniversary, she was one of four that was really pivotal to that programming. So looking up to her and her books and her coverage of the Supreme Court, but also Susan Stamberg and Linda Wertheimer, who I've interviewed. Fortunately, those three women are very important to how I see my work. Of course, Cokie Roberts, the late Cokie Roberts, was also a great influence on me. But I would also say that people like Terry Gross and Dave Davies and the people at Fresh Air, they were very inspirational to my work. You know, I do think that I have somewhat copied what they're doing in some ways because I just admire it so much. You know, I listen to that program and hear an hour-long conversation with somebody really engaging with all the nuances of a topic, and that's really important to me to see. But also, when I'm looking at media, I also, you know, understand that media does have a bias. That's just kind of how it is today. So if I'm looking at NPR, which is, you know, a more moderate source, I'm also going to be looking at a source on the left, like maybe MSNBC or some say the New York Times. And then I'm also going to be looking at a source on the right, like, you know, maybe some independent journalists on the right or also reporting from Fox, and not even, you know, reflecting their reporting necessarily, but seeing the topics they cover. That's really vital for me to see so that we can have like a more representative voice of America. But yeah, those are some great inspirations to me.
Do you ever get nervous before an interview?
Oh, definitely.
What are some of your coping mechanisms?
I don't really have any. I think it's just a matter of time before I hit that accept button on Zoom and I let them into the recording. But, you know, oftentimes I haven't talked to that person at all. I've talked to their assistant. I've talked to their publicist. I've talked to a publishing company and I haven't talked to them. So they don't even know who I am. You know, I've had people literally ask me, who are you? They don't know who I am necessarily. And that's really humbling because I can simply make a connection with them in 30 minutes or even less. And, you know, I think that speaks to what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to make connections between one side of the aisle and the next. And I think when I'm talking to an interviewee and I can make that connection in 30 minutes or less, that really restores faith in my thoughts about communication and journalism.
You have a way of asking questions that sort of indicate some wisdom beyond your years, or at least what I think your interview partner would expect. I'm thinking of the David Cross interview in particular. He seemed sort of surprised by some of your questions. And if you're in an instance where you're interviewing somebody on a book tour and they don't know who you are, they just roll off of one interview into the other. And all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, I'm getting interviewed by this 12-year-old kid. Then you hit them with hard-hitting questions and thoughtful questions. I mean, that really has to, you've been able to capture some pretty incredible moments in your conversations. Are you able to kind of grasp that as it's happening, or do you feel like it's just sort of a happy coincidence of how this has come together?
I think when I ask a question that they don't expect, maybe because of my age, they kind of like, it lets down their guard and allows them to be more personal. And I think that's another reason that my age has kind of helped me. But yeah, to your question, I can kind of sense when I'm getting somewhere, and that's when I start to ask more follow-up questions. And I do start usually in a similar way that you do, actually, talking about their upbringing. And I think that shows so much about who they are as a person, and especially for famous people, when once they become famous, their whole life has been behind a camera or on a screen. I think their childhood and starting at that point, asking how were you raised, what was your religion, what was your life at home, that is really important to knowing a person. And I think, you know, what you're referring to in the David Cross interview and maybe in some of my other interviews actually stems from that. I remember talking to him last summer and asking him about being Jewish and also about what his dad was like and how he, you know, is actually trying not to reflect some of the mistakes that his parents made as a new father. And I think, you know, I kind of sense that those questions not only caught him off guard, but also I think that they, maybe, you know, I shouldn't speak for everyone that I interviewed, but I think having somebody ask you those questions kind of helps you to work through some of the stuff that people really don't talk about that much. And really for me, the biggest compliment that I can get after an interview is when somebody says, wow, I've never told anybody about that, or I haven't talked about that in so long.
Yeah. And you've been able to capture many of those moments in the interviews that I've listened to. In our remaining time, Ezra, you know, what do you think the future of News Nerds is? Where do you want the platform to go, and what do you think it can be?
Yeah, I don't really know, because I don't know. In the past year, my life has changed so much with going into high school and prioritizing other things, and I think that's been good. I've really liked doing that. You know, I'm doing a few interviews here and there. I just recorded one with Alice Waters that came out this month. But yeah, there was a substantial gap between when I recorded my interview with David Cross and then when I recorded this most recent one. So I think what I have to look at now is like, what are the voices that we really, really need to hear? Like, I really need to distill even more what I've been doing to have the same type of nuance and the same type of variety but with less shows. That's going to be a challenge for me. But I'm also looking towards how this is an election year and how new things are happening all the time, not even here in America, but abroad. And I'm wondering, like, what is the best interface? And I don't really know. And I'm not sure if I am going to pursue more at the current moment. But what I do know is that I've learned so much from talking to people like you or talking to somebody that I'm interviewing or even just writing and producing and publishing and marketing this show, that it's really shown me that this industry is something that I'd like to pursue.
Well, I think that's a wonderful disposition, and it will serve you well in whatever pursuit comes your way or whatever pursuit you choose. Ezra, if folks want to learn more about News Nerds, where would you point them?
We have a website. It's newsnerdspodcast.com. We're not on Twitter. Drop the Twitter after, you know, that went downhill. And we're not really anywhere else on social media. The website's the best place to get a hold of me. You can contact me there and subscribe to the mailing list or whatever. But, you know, I don't want to sound too much like a YouTube person. So you can just find it. You know, sometimes we actually mail out old VHS tapes of the podcast. So you might be surprised by the ways that we, get around in this state. It's a pretty diverse way of marketing things. But yeah, you can find it there. It's a great honor to be on your show and to have people listen.
Well, it's been great talking to you too, Ezra. I wish you all the best, and hopefully we can keep in touch down the road and maybe even collaborate in some way. Thank you for the work you do. Thank you for sharing your voice with our listeners, and I wish you all the best down the road.
Hey, thanks so much, Justin. It's been great to talk.
Thanks for listening to A New Angle. We really appreciate it. And we're coming to you from Studio 49. Generous gift from UM alums Michelle and Warren Hansen. A New Angle is presented by First Security Bank, Blackfoot Communications, and the University of Montana College of Business, with additional support from Consolidated Electrical Distributors, Drum Coffee, and Montana Public Radio. Keely Larson is our producer. Maddie Jordan is our production assistant. VTO Jeff Ament and John Wicks made our music. And Jeff Meese is our master of all things sound. Thanks a lot, and see you next time.